Okay, so Kai, when did you actually start flying, and how long have you been flying?
I started flying in 1997, and I've been flying a lot since then.
Okay, so when did you first start flying cross country? How long had you been flying by that time?
I'd say the STEC C was in 98, which is only a 3K hop over the back, but it was a thermal, so I did climb to maybe 1,000 foot above the hill, my first ever thermal, and dribble over the back with it.
Where was that?
In Dorset. Mm. On Bell Hill, which was it was an amazing feeling, fantastic feeling. Mm-hmm. Even though it was only 3K, I, you know, had that feeling, of climbing in the thermal, and the feeling of leaving the hill.
So presumably you were kind of like inspired by others by that time. You know, you'd sort of seen other people going cross country and stuff.
Oh, I'd seen people climb high, you know, and yeah, feel quite envious of that and want to do it, sort of in awe of it, really, thinking that it looked that it was just amazing thing that I couldn't do, but then realised that if I went round in circles in the right place, I could do it.
So when did you start to actually get really into XC flying?
Immediately, really. Well, after the first XC, then I just kept on trying, and I moved to the Longmynd area in 98, and my first XC, I think, was off the Wrekin. Probably did 12k, you know, but once you've had your first experience of climbing high, leaving the hill, yeah, that's, but I guess then the next big thing is the second thermal. Let's talk about finding the second thermal, which I guess is an important second, you know, next stage. So yeah, if 12k was probably one thermal and a second thermal, I think, and then land. So that was a pretty big, you know, flight, and I remember having a big smile on my face at 12k. Whereas now I think I'd describe it as a bomb.
You know, not that many years later, you actually did the record-breaking flight. So how did you evolve from, like, your 3 and 12K flight to the 190K that you did in 2004, was it, or 2003?
Well, I think it was a lot of hard work, really. A lot of, you know, just not being bothered by anything other than climbing high and leaving the hill. Not being worried about, you know, the retrieve back, or just knowing that somehow you'll get back. And I mean, I remember days where I did 3 flights in one day, and 2 of them landing on the A49, and then 1 maybe a bit further, that kind of thing, or on Wenlock Edge. But all of that, I think, was good apprenticeship, really. Mm. Learning more and more about the terrain at the back of the Longmynd, and learning more about thermaling in general, and finding that second thermal. Every day is different. I'm going to talk generally now, I suppose. But every day is different, and I think that you learn with experience. You learn that one of the first things to do is to suss out the character of a day. So by that I mean, you know, every day the thermals feel a bit different. There's always something slightly different about them. Obviously they're not nice circular tubes that stay in a nice line for you. They sort of move around with the different layers, and the character of the thermal changes as you go up. But I think it's important to, one point really is to, you can sort of suss out how, you know, while you're still on the hill, you can suss out how long lasting the thermals are, and, you know, whether they're going to be easy ones to stay in, and make a decision about what kind of XC you're going to have, you're likely to have, because once you're downwind, you still get the same type of thermals for a particular day. And I think that, yeah, I think after the first year of flying, I sort of began to realise that. That was quite helpful for, you know, for flying, and for making a decision about how long to stay in a thermal, and, you know, when it was time to quit, what are your chances of finding the second one and being able to stay up in it. Appreciating that, really, before you set off. I don't necessarily think you should do that, but I mean, as you get more experience, it's quite, you do take that on board, I think. I think at first it's good to just go for it and just see what the hell happens, really. Well, the day before, you need to make sure that if you're interested in, you know, your flight being recorded and going in the league, to that your batteries are fully charged. Mm. That's about it, really, the day before, I think. Maybe keep an eye on the weather forecast. Obviously, on the morning of the day, have a good check of the forecast, see what the weather's going to be doing, you know, throughout the day, so that if you think the wind's going to change direction, then that will help you plan your flight and keep it safe. You know, maybe it's going to pick up to something that's dangerous. Yeah, then when you get to the hill, to make sure that you go to the loo. Or if you're planning a really long flight, have other preparations ready in the flight. To check the air map for the planned route, have a look at the sky, see actually what direction the clouds are moving, so you've got an idea of which way you're going to go. Especially, you know, from Longmen, for example, you need to be prepared for going north or south of Birmingham airspace. Yeah, you may, I'm not very good at having eat or drink food or drink in flight, but really I think you should have something to drink if you're planning a long flight. Obviously for a couple of hour flight it's not going to make too much difference, but you do get pretty dehydrated over 4 or 5 hour flight. Wear the right amount of clothes, I guess. That's quite an issue sometimes I find to decide on, you know, how hot I'm going to be when I'm up there.
Mm.
So I tend to overdress and underdress. Nothing worse than being too cold, because then it's sort of store you end up not being able to get off the hill with 5 layers on and a baking hot day, but never mind.
So what are your tips like in the air then? So once you're actually going on the next thing?
Well, I think one of the main things is observation. So to always be aware of the clouds. You may notice a small wisp that then turns into your next cloud. You might notice that before you've climbed fully to the existing cloud. I'm quite wary of clouds that have been around for a while, because you know, you may glide off to them and then they're dying. Often, I mean, people say don't glide out into the blue, but if you see something forming out in the blue, then it can be a good move. An observation, you know, in terms of birds. When I get low, I tend to forget to look for birds, but I try to remind myself. Often it helps. The flight the other day I had, the buzzards got me back up. I flew down into their thermal from above them and got back up with them. And as you get lower, of course, then you need to be using the ground features more than the sky features. And you can look for things like wind on the ground. And a good indicator of that there's a thermal around is you know, seeing wind on the ground and sussing out which direction it's going, and then flying beyond it too, because it's filling in the thermal, and hoping that you connect. Often it works.
So are there any other ground sources that you would usually go for if you were getting low?
Yeah, I mean, I'd tend to go for anything that's different from the surrounding, what's around it. So, you know, not cloud fields can work well. Cornfields. Something that stands out from what's around it, really. So, you know, if you've got a cornfield or a plough field in amongst a lot of green, then that can be a good actual source of heat. You know, you can find the source, then you've still got to find the trigger, because the source of heat might roll along the ground, being pushed by the wind until it hits something that makes it decide to go up, like a sharp edge or a hill or an aerial or something, power lines. So if you're lucky, you'll find a source that's also a trigger, you know, if it's the right shape of terrain, then you really, you know, do hit a boomer. Yeah, so when I get low, I tend to look for those kind of sources and triggers, and the wind on the ground particularly. Lakes that have little waves on them. There's a lot of little lakes around, many more than you'd think, really. And you only need a small amount of water and you can see the waves on them. You can see the wind on the water surface and know which direction it is, to help you look for the thermal. Like, you know, sometimes you see fields that where the crops move, you know, you can see the wind. But usually it's pretty desperate when you're down that low. And you just start swearing and yeah, using all desperate techniques. Another very important thing is decision making. I think it's important to make a decision about where you're going to fly to next. Stick to it. So I'm not saying I'm always very good at it, and you know, I've been accused of wandering around the sky. You know, we don't really often get second chances on paragliders, and there's been quite a few occasions where I've regretted not sticking to my original decision about where I'm going to look for a thermal. Well, that's not to say that, you know, if you're absolutely sure there's one nearby, you know, obviously if you see something that tells you there's a thermal nearby and you're on a different course, then obviously you fly there. But if you've got no other indicators, real strong indicators, then best to stick to the original decision. Keep on the glide, you know, maybe with a little bit of bar, and see if the thermal that you thought was there is there, you know, at the place that you arrive at, that you originally decided. So decision making, it's not a good idea to change your mind with paragliding. Usually puts you on the deck. I think one of the fascinating things about paragliding is thermals, because as I said earlier, no 2 days are the same. Thermals have different characters every day, in my experience. You learn to adapt your thermaling for, you know, that particular thermal with experience. But I think as a new pilot, it's a good thing to experiment with moving around a thermal more, not just going in what you think are 360s, but to maybe push upwind a bit and find where the edge of the thermal is, and try to learn how to adjust your turn on the next 360 to maximise the lift. Because I mean, that's something I do all the time too. Every turn I'm assessing where I'm going to be turning, how I'm going to adjust the turn on the next turn, so that I'm ready to widen the turn, for example, or in a certain direction that I've decided, you know, on the next turn I'm ready to for that, and I make that wider turn, and it often works. Usually it is where I think it was. So, you know, my advice is to, especially when you're learning, is to just experiment with moving around the thermal a lot. What do you think, Judith?
On a hang glider, it's a very different experience, because you're so much you're so much closer to the wing. I actually found that my thermaling slightly deteriorated since I started flying paragliders. On a hang glider, I could centre in a thermal really, really well, and felt I was climbing really efficiently a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And on a paraglider, I've actually had to do the kind of sort of wafting about a lot to actually really find the core.
Yeah. I haven't got the experience of a hang glider, but I think that probably it's easy to be pushed out of the thermal on a paraglider. And I think that you can get confused by the lift that you get at the edge of a thermal for being the core. So you end up thinking you're near the core when you're not. You get pushed to the side of the thermal, and then you fall up, drop out of it, and then you get blown away from it, and then you have to really do a wide turn to re-find it. Mm. You know, really hunt for it where you think it. If that happens to me, I immediately decide, you know, where is it? Where do I think it is? And just go there. Mm. And you have to fly in a straight line for quite some time to get there. I think another good tip is to be patient. For example, when you get fairly low, say, maybe 1,000 feet off the deck or something, and you finally find something, as long as it's keeping you in the air, then stay with it. And the chances are that it will drift and collect or attract other lift, and it will start to go up. And it might take 10 minutes or more, but just being really patient is a good thing, and especially a good thing, you know, when you're learning anyway, to gives you more time in the air, more thermal practicing. Many times that's worked for me, being patient. It's difficult in a competition, but when you're on XC flight, who cares?
So Kai, your favourite min site must be Corndon, because you want to go there whenever it's flyable. What is it about Corndon?
Well, Corndon's great because whatever the wind does, you know, if it's one of those days where it's going to change, there's always a slope somewhere on Corndon that you can use to get up from. That's one of the reasons I really like it. I think it's a very interesting hill because there's a lot of valleys and, you know, slopes within Corndon itself, especially over on the west side. Yeah, I like it because on most XC days, when I've gone to Corndon, I've got up to the clouds and got away from it. It's not a hill that I particularly want to soar on, but it's a hill that I really enjoy getting away from it. Almost always works at some point during the day. Sometimes you have to wait for the 4 o'clock bus, but by 4 o'clock you're even more grateful to get up into the clouds. You've been sweating all day on the hill.
Okay, Kai, so tell me about your most memorable flights that you've had then.
Well, you may think that getting the British record, that flight was the most memorable, but actually after about 4 hours it became hellishly boring. I mean, I wouldn't say boring really, but it was just a long, long slog really. I realised that if I really stuck it out, then maybe I could get the record. But recently, very recently, I've had two of my best flights in the Mynd area, doing triangles from the Long Mynd and actually flying to Corndon and soaring Lamfar for a few beats and then getting a thermal and climbing back out. And on one flight, flying south to Bury Ditches, on the other flight, flying north towards Shrewsbury over the Stiperstone. Those flights, I feel, are the most exciting and best flights I've had in this area. It's particularly good getting to Corndon and flying down onto Lamfar, just making it, literally just scrabbling around the corner of the southwest gully and getting onto Lamfar and thinking, oh, I've made it here, now this doesn't look too good. And just putting in a couple of beats below the top of Lamfar, sliding out into the valley there.
Below the top of Lamfar is the landing field.
It's low, yeah, it's getting low. It's like, so I just thought, right, last chance is just to fly into the valley because I can't soar this, it's not soarable. So I just flew straight out, straight into a 3 metre climb, about 50 metres from the hill, and then back up to base. Fantastic, fantastic feeling. So I'd gone from the Mynd to one of our other sites, Corndon, got back up. And on that flight, then I flew north towards, I decided with the way the clouds were, it was best to go north towards Shrewsbury. And, you know, with a triangle in mind, so I was trying to get my distances right whilst flying to make sure it was a valid triangle. And then cutting back across the Stiperstones, the hills in front of the north end of the Mynd, getting low again and thinking, oh, am I going to make it? And then getting a climb, being patient, as I was talking about earlier, and just in a weak climb at about 1,000 foot. Or maybe less, maybe 500 foot even, and just sticking with that until eventually it built, and then got back up. Big smile on my face as I knew I was going to make it back to landing. On the first triangle flight that I did recently, yeah, it was pretty special to get back to the Mynd. And then I realised, you know, that I could make this triangle bigger by flying over the back of the Mynd. So I took a climb on the front of the Mynd, I think with Graham Baird, and then got up to base there and just took a line over the back to Raglath. And so I flew from, I think I flew about four of our sites in one flight. I flew to Corndon on that flight as well, back to the Mynd, over to Raglath, on to Caradoc. Didn't go as far as Alorley, but didn't need to, you know, and then came back across town quite low. Got a climb on the golf course at the back of the Long Mynd in the gullies, quite low in there because I decided that's where the lift was coming from and just had enough height to get there. Back up to base and push back across the Mynd and back to landing field to take off, to land. So fantastic. Yeah, perfect day really. By flying 3 or 4K over the back, I added 20 or 30 kilometres to my score for the league, so it was well worth it. It took me a good hour to get back though. I spent a good while over the golf course before I got up.
I suppose that's another tip. Never give up.
Never give up, no. That's right, yeah, never give up. A lot of it is about determination, how determined you are to keep going. After you've been in the air for 3 or 4 hours, then it is determination, really. Mm. Yeah, and stamina, and having the right attitude not to give up. Very easy to get pub suck.
Well, on that note, thanks very much.